Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host, as always. And today we are joined by Jeremy Lee, the dynamic country lead for the Philippines and Vietnam. With a rich background spanning across Singapore, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Vietnam, Jeremy stands out as a senior regional sales manager at the LEGO Group. His passion extends beyond sales, diving deep into the realms of diversity, equity, and inclusion. As an advocate and leader in DEI, he fervently believes in fostering safe spaces for employees to shine. Jeremy's voice resonates on topics like coaching, leadership, and diversity recruitment. His tenure at Johnson as a national sales manager and his entrepreneurial venture in the events industry further showcase his versatility. An alumnus of the National University of Singapore, Jeremy's commitment to continuous learning and advocacy is commendable. I've asked him here to join us today and share his story and talk about managing sales across international borders. So Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm very good. And thanks for that very lovely and warm introduction.
Yeah, pleasure to have you here. Before we get talking about doing business across borders and sales and obviously managing regions, how did you even get involved in the industry to begin with? Were your parents business owners? Did you family members work in sales? Were you like sitting around the dinner table and your uncle be like, Jeremy, sell me this pen? Is this?
No, nothing as quite exciting as that. I grew up from an average family, I would say, in Singapore. So my dad's a carpenter. And my mom's a homemaker. I grew up in a family of four, so I'm the eldest of four kids. Mm. And I think I've always been a people person. Mm. I think this is part of me that's pretty much an extrovert, and I've always enjoyed connecting with people, talking to people. And it's been evident since I was young. I was involved a lot on the stage, in theater, in storytelling competitions, things like this. So I guess the gravitation towards sales career probably wasn't much of a surprise. Though I did say I wanted to do marketing at the beginning, and I did take a marketing degree in NUS, in my university. But I think my leader saw something in me and they said, okay, I think this guy is gonna be cut out in sales, right? He connects with people like that. So yeah, I guess that's my little beginning into a sales career, and I've been pretty much on a sales career ever since. Yeah.
Were you just a natural, or did you feel like you had, what were some of the challenges that you faced to succeed in sales? Because obviously you have to do some work to become senior regional sales manager at the LEGO Group. It's not just picking like you. So what were some of the biggest challenges that you faced in your sales career?
Yeah. And you're right, for sure. Nobody goes into this being top on number one on the first day, right? I think, but obviously you've got to enjoy the work. I think number one, you've got to enjoy working with people. You've got to enjoy connecting with people. One of the challenges that you go through at the beginning is you've got to learn how to deal with rejection. Mm. I think all salespeople will tell you that, right? The number one thing is you need to learn how to deal with rejections. And maybe I'll share a little story, right? One of the first roles that I had was a customer development manager, and that was in the consumer healthcare industry. So that was with Johnson. That was basically my first job. So I remember that I was selling contact lenses, so the Acuvue brand contact lenses, and basically my customers were a pool of optical shops, right? So a lot of them were business owners, small-time business owners. Some of them have been around for a while, some a bit newer businesses. And what I would do every day, and I remember that I had 6 calls a day, right? That's my target. Every day I got to go to 6 customers, and I need to make 6 calls, and then talk to people, and then to get them to buy my products, stock up my products, and recommend my products to patients. And I'm telling you, it wasn't easy, right? For somebody who was new, and I was like, what, 20, 25, 26 years old? Every single day, waking up and going, I need to make 6 calls. I need to go down to customer, meet 6 different people, think of the sales pitch and all that. I think that gave me a lot of practice, obviously. And obviously, the kind of practice accumulates. But it also means that every single day, I was setting myself up for rejection, for possibility of rejection, for somebody to say no to you. And I think, obviously, now when I look back, I think it was really good training ground. A lot of times, it's about practice. It's about improving your spill. It's about improving your speech. It's about improving how do you then really get a customer to buy what they need or identify their needs. And obviously, with 6 times a day, you get a lot of practice and you just get better and better at it.
I love that. Yeah, I don't often say this out loud, but I feel like in a lot of ways, our current era, like every generation has had a challenge. And I feel like our current generation is about overcoming this pacifier sucking ninny culture where it's like instant gratification and safe spaces and words hurt as much as sticks and stones. I remember the day when I was a kid, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words cannot hurt me. And I'm not saying you can go around being a jerk. That's not it at all. But I'm just saying that there are harsh realities to life. If I step in front of the car, if I step in front of a moving car, the universe, the laws of nature, they don't care how I'm feeling that day. You know what I mean? So in certain senses, and like we talk about, if you are, the whole purpose of business is a company, it's just a group of people that are helping another group of people, and they do it via product or service. And something I want to flesh out that people may have missed is that you talked about that you had to meet new people daily. If you if you want to get paid every day, you need to meet people every day. Unless you're, and even if you're selling a subscription service, unless it's big enough to cover your monthly expenses, you know what I mean? Like, you typically need multiple subscribers per day. If you're selling a $10 thing, $20 thing a month, so that means you have to meet people every day. If you want to get paid daily, you got to meet people every day. You got to generate leads. And just meeting people isn't enough. You have to meet them. And then there's like a suspect. Everyone's got different categories, right? But you got suspect, prospect, qualified prospect. Like, and then there's suspect, prospect, marketing qualified prospect, sales qualified prospect, right? Now you're actually getting into the game. Like, now you got the girl in the room and you're taking your clothes out. Like, now it's because it's going to happen. What's going to happen? And that's, people don't get that. They just thought, I called two people.
For sure. Yeah. You're right. You got to work through the funnel. And it's interesting you mentioned that, because I remember my first sales manager will come into the office. So we'll go into the office every day, right? Every morning we report in. And every day without fail, just before lunchtime, she would come into a show. And we had a sales room. I remember all of us sitting in the sales room. And we're doing our administration in the morning, clearing emails and all that. And she would come in just before lunch, open the door. And she'd be like, what the hell are all of you doing here? Get out there and meet people. Get out there now. I do not want to see you in a room after lunch. Yeah. Every day she'll do that. Yeah. So for all of us, I remember that moment really is a bit like Seinfeld moment, right? Like, she come in, hey, what's up, everybody?
Yeah, like Kramer coming in.
I can't remember that, because it was ingrained in my mind, right? Like, yes, you need to go out there and meet people. Do not be in the office, because this is not where you get sales. You've got to be out there. That's where the money is. You've got to be out there. That's where our customers are. Right. Spend time with the customers. Going to get sales through emails. That's right. Why I always remember. So always go out there. That's where our customers are, where our consumers are. Yeah, be out there.
What would you recommend to someone who's maybe starting out or struggling in sales?
Depending on what aspect this person is, but I think there needs to be a lot of self-awareness, right? Because I think the way I coach my team sometimes is, if you look at what makes a really good key account manager, right? Are there competencies that you'll be looking at? Is it relationship building? Is it identifying customers' needs? Is it analysis? So I think every key account manager, every salesperson needs to know what are some of these key competencies that would allow you to deliver your best at your role. And it can identify where are the gaps that you have, and you can work on that. So I think having a deep level of self-awareness is really critical.
Yeah. I agree with that a whole lot. Do you feel like, I was going to ask this question, but I'm just going to say it because it was going to be a leading question. I agree 100%. And that's actually one of the key tenets. So I may or may not have mentioned this. In 2020, I hired 10 researchers to help me go through all the academic literature into what makes or breaks success for small and medium-sized businesses. And we went through hundreds, thousands of studies, and we ultimately boiled it down to 8 critical success factors: self-efficacy, market intelligence, strategic planning, marketing strategy, sales strategy, money management, business operations, and business intelligence. And they're all fairly self-explanatory. You know, business intelligence are the feedback loops, your dashboards, the KPI, all that stuff. How are we doing? The real-time data, both from customers, leads, market, all that stuff. But then there's also operations is like the hiring process, your meeting rhythms, where you store your IP, cybersecurity, legal compliance, all that fits into the operations. But with sales, one of the things that we found, at least with personality dimensions, is the personality dimensions that were most highly correlated with success were assertiveness, emotional stability, likability, a will to achieve, and openness to experience. And that's just in sales, right? So when we talk about like self-efficacy, which I feel like that's the factor everything is built on. If you don't do the work, like, hard work is not enough to be successful. We all know lots of people that work hard that are not successful, but you won't get there without hard work. And so it's like the bare bone. And so you have to have a high degree of self-efficacy. That is personality traits, leadership skills, and disciplines. And leadership skills, we drilled in, what is leadership? It's self-awareness, communication, cooperation skills, emotional intelligence, and adaptability. It's exactly what you're saying. You have to have that self-awareness of where you're at and how you're engaging and interacting with other people. So I think that's a fantastic place for people to start if they're starting out struggling, is understanding yourself And what do you have to demonstrate to play the game, so to speak? Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I love how you break it down, right? I love how you break down the different factors of success and how then different competencies build that up. Because I always feel that if you can't, one of my friends was a great trainer. He said that to me, because every time you train something, he said, if you cannot break it down into steps, if you cannot break it down into different factors, components, then you cannot learn it. And I thought that's really powerful, because as long as we're not able to break it down into small steps, we're not able to accurately identify what needs to be done,
right,
what needs to be worked on, and then we can make it like small steps of progress. But yeah, until we do that at a high level, you're always going to get a very generic kind of answer or
right,
generic kind of approach. But you need to deep dive and go into what exactly is going to be the one step that's going to help you improve your whatever you want to do.
100%. I agree. Yeah. I'm more of a marketer than a sales. I guess I'm both, but I always had that issue with branding. Like, branding is a real thing and it has immense value and it's very, but it's just really hard to quantify and break it in. For me, and this is my, I feel like brand is something like a relationship that's built over time and like what you're known for versus like something you necessarily create. Like, you can pick the colors and all that. Okay. But after that, it's about how you behave and treat people. And I feel, but it's the same thing where it's so, we're sponsoring this event. We're putting our logo there. Like, it's not as, how many leads did you generate today? How many people redeemed the coupon? How many clicks did you're at? Like, that's so, people don't realize it, but the internet in a lot of ways really brought what was called direct response marketing. It made it the mainstream marketing platform because everything is measured. Where before,
totally,
it wasn't that way. Magazine ad, a newspaper ad. And if you didn't have, so what they would do is they would say, ask for office XYZ, or if you had to mail in a return coupon, they'd have to like to put in the address and they'd be like, unit 201. Unit 201 was the ad they put in that magazine, and unit 204 was the ad. It was the same one. It was the same address, like that unit number. There were no units. You know what I mean? Yeah. That was their key to track it. And most people were too lazy or didn't think about doing that to get that tracking. So I've been on a bit of a tangent. Can you speak a little bit to the relationship between marketing and sales, and how do people do that successfully? Because I'm sure some of the common battles and friction points between the two.
Ah, yes. The dynamics between marketing and sales. You would probably agree with me that these are really two sides of the same coin, right? One can't do without the other. It's extremely important. And the way I see is, the marketing role has always been to ensure that in terms of where the brand direction is, where the brand is going, how do you bring the personality of the brand values of the product into the market. And when it comes to sales, it's always about the downstream, right? The execution. Now, how then do you bring the brand, the product into the market? And so from a sales point of view, it's always about then where do you play, right? Marketing will bring the product. Then for sales, we'll bring on a product. Where do you play? Which customers do we go to? It's going to be online. It's going to be offline. It's going to be retail. And in some detail, what do we do? Who do you actually reach out to? So I think that it's always complementary what we do. But you're also right in saying that marketing has changed so much. And I think the way sales interacting with marketing is very different as well. Marketing these days is all about ROAS, right? Return on ad spend. Mm-hmm. And for every single $1 I spend, where's my ROI coming from? And these days, with the capabilities of a marketer, is very different, right? From say 10, 20 years ago, because now everything's about analytics. There's an enormous amount of data, right? Big data is out there. How do you really harness the power of big data and really understand your customers a little bit more? So now you have data and like, where is your customer buying it? How is your customer buying it? When's your customer buying it? And all these are critical information for us to feedback into the loop. And obviously with that information, marketing then shares it back to sales. So I think it's a lot of collaboration in a sense, because then they can probably even advise us better. Like, where is it most effective when I place my product in a particular channel? Is it online? Is it offline? At which discount point is it most effective in terms of selling this product, this promotion, to bring it up to the next level? So I think this is a lot going, and it's ever evolving. This landscape is ever evolving with, obviously, the internet. So it's interesting.
And what do you feel are some of the timeless fundamentals of sales? Like the 10 commandments or the 5 commandments of sales, thou shalt follow up. What do you feel, what would you say are the basic principles that probably will be here even in 5 years from now?
Ooh, that's a good one. Let me take a stab at that. Number one, know your customers' needs. I think if there's a one thing I would say, regardless of industry, regardless of which key account management you're talking about, what kind of customers you have, always identify their needs. And that is a skill in itself. Because not think about it. Whenever you go to meet a customer, not every single customer is going to open up immediately on the first day they meet them. Nobody's going to do that. That's not how life works. You build a relationship, you earn their trust, right? With that, then you start deep diving in conversations, identifying their needs. Sometimes customers may not even be exactly sure of their needs. You've got to help them uncover their needs. So what do they really want? What do you, are you looking for? Looking for volume? Looking for margin? What are you really, really looking for? Are you looking for assortment? So I think there's a lot of there's a lot of strength, right, in that first thing about just understanding customers' needs. And I think that in itself is really important. Yeah. And I think the second one is around what you just said, right? Always follow up. And it's interesting because one of the small little things that people don't take a notice, right? And I got a little interesting story to say this. So I back to my that industry I was in doing 6 calls a day. So one of my customers called me up quite a few times, right? And I think I was in a meeting or something, and there was like 5 missed calls. And I'm like, okay, I was getting nervous, right? So 5 missed calls, big deal, right? So I immediately after my meeting, my training, I gave him a call back, and I had like a half an hour tirade from him. Just going on and on. But one thing he said really stood out for me, and that kind of completely changed my perspective on this customer relationship. And he said, Jeremy, if I message you, I'm not asking you to go out for tea. If I'm calling you and I'm calling 5 times, it means I have something urgent. So freaking pick up the phone. And so that was a big thing for me. And that was the moment I realized these small little moments matter so much. So even in the instance, even if I'm not able to pick up the phone, what I should have done and what I learned is pick up the phone and say, hey, I'm in a meeting, whatever. I will call you back. I promise I'll call you back, but just hang in there. I'll get back to you. And obviously, please do remember to either return the call, return the message. So it could be a whatever, WhatsApp, it could be whatever, but at least let the customer know that you're there, you're not picking up the phone for whatever reasons, but you'll get back. Right. I think small little moments like this build trust and build a follow-up, and that obviously paves the way to bigger things to come, because you can never grow an account big until you get all these small little things done.
Right. I love that. That's great. Yeah. So we have know your customer's needs, follow-up, quick response, over-deliver in customer care.
Yeah.
Anything else? Are those the pillars?
And I think one more I would say is always build a relationship. Know your customers, build relationship, extremely important. Find out everything about them, right? Find out about how big is the family, what's the dog's name, when's the wife's birthday. Do all that. And then obviously if it's going to be like the wife's birthday, put into a calendar, and when you turn up with a little gift or a little cake for the wife, these little things matter. They do. Absolutely. We're all human beings.
100%. 100%. One of our repeat guests, Brian Kurtz, he was VP of a company that did like $40 million a year for forever. It was a direct response mail order company. And he said, not everything is a sales event, but everything is a relationship event. And not everything is a sales event, but everything is a relationship event.
So true.
Keep that in mind. And so I think it just speaks for you say. And again, it comes down to business is supposed to be about helping people. It's supposed to be about helping people one way, shape, or form or another. So I love that. Now, can you speak to the difference between maybe B2B or customer B2C versus enterprise level sales? And how do those differ?
I think I'll probably speak to my experience as well. I think most of my life has been done. I've been doing key account management. So a lot of it, so most of my industries I've been in is all B2B. So I've sold to optical shops, I've sold to casinos, coffee to casinos. And I'm not selling kind of toys through distributors. I think one of the key things about B2B selling, it's really important to know that you're not just selling straight to customers or consumers. You've got another layer before you. So in the optical industry, it's an optometrist who's delivering my products to my consumers. So right now in the Philippines or in Vietnam, where I have a distributor, I'm relying on the distributor to then also push on my products, right? So I think there is a big thing around partnership. Right, B2B is all a partnership. So a lot of that selling takes place in the partnership that you have with distributors, with your customers. So I think that's extremely important. And that also means that you're very, very mindful, right? That while you want to get your products out there, you're also extremely mindful of the customers, the distributors and the partnerships that you're building and the needs that they have. So therefore, you're not only considering about the end consumers, you're also considering about the immediate partners you're working with. So it's going to be a win for yourself, a win for your end consumers, and a win for your partners. So I think whenever you're in a key account management role, you always think about win-win-win. How do I have a solution that wins for everybody in this particular ecosystem?
And do you have any tips about how do you uncover people's needs when they're not telling them to you themselves directly?
Oh, and a good one. I think this will take a long time. But I think the key thing is good questioning techniques. Mm-hmm. Good questioning techniques. And there's a saying, there's a quote. I'm trying to get a quote right. It's not about having the right answers. It's about having the right questions. And the way you phrase your question, is it a what question? Is it a how question? Is it a why question? The way you phrase it, the way you think about answer or how the customer would deliver the answer, the way you phrase that question is extremely important, because every single question that redirects or the conversation into a different space. And obviously when you're doing that, you're thinking as a salesperson, how do I get to close? As a salesperson, you're always thinking about, and what's my end goal, right? My end goal is to close the deal. To close. So I'm here where I am, whether I'm getting obstacles, coming challenges, I'm getting like, oh, I don't do this because so on and so forth. You're doing a lot of active listening. Right. Or active listening to the customers, trying to uncover the needs. Then you think about, okay, what's the next good question that I can ask to get the person to go this way and to close the deal? So good questioning techniques, extremely important.
Are you familiar with spin selling?
Yeah, I think that I've done that before, really early in my career, I believe.
Yeah, spin. So those who don't know, they're listening. It's a good framework for you, for someone, again, maybe someone starting or struggling, or even if you're advanced, to refresh. Spin is SPIN. So these guys followed all these sales reps, and they found the highest producers would ask situation-based questions, SP, problem-based questions, implication, and then needs payoff. So it's and really a lot of time you spend your focus on the situation and the implication. How's business? Oh, things are good. Oh, so what, you're going to buy a house? No, I'm not going to buy a house. Why aren't you buying a house? Because sales aren't up. Oh, so sales aren't up. Does that mean, so what if you can't buy the house? That's the implication. So it's, you're talking about the situation, you label the problem, then you go into the implications of it. And then what should we do? How do we fix this? And you get the mutual buy-in on what the solution looks like. And then you would, what about this solution? Does that fit that box? And so this is a tip for people listening. If they're not questioning, check out Spin. So
Spin selling, yes.
What are some of the specific skills or behaviors that you think are important for your staff to improve and develop?
I think one really important thing is collaboration.
Mm.
Extremely important. And I'll talk a bit about it. I think when you are managing a team, obviously, a lot of information going around, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think when you have a team that is not built on collaboration, what it also means is a lot of time that this information is not fluid. Mm. This information doesn't get passed by. And then therefore, the team may not make the best decisions because they don't have the full picture of things. So I think it's extremely, extremely important to have a trust and collaboration within a team.
Mm.
So I think this would be my number one thing. And it also, because I think also having teamwork and collaboration, what it also means is you don't have to do the supervisory work all the time. When it's collaboration, it also means there's a lot more productivity and efficiency within the team without you being there in person, for example.
Right.
Yeah.
I love that.
I think it's extremely important. Yeah.
And what about habits? Are there specific like daily, weekly habits that you think have helped yourself and some of the more successful people in sales that you've seen?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I think let's take a big one. One of my biggest, I think, habits is your time management, right? Your calendar planning. And I have a little story to share on this. And I learned it the hard way, to be honest. I think when I first took on my role as national sales manager in Malaysia, and that was my first time where I had 12 people reporting to me at one time. So the ratio was one sales manager to 12 sales reps. And I think right at the beginning, it was like, okay, I'm just trying to be there for everybody. And my thing I would say to my team would be like, okay, anytime you need me, buzz me, right? Text me, buzz me, book my time, my calendar is open, all of that. And that turned out to be I think there is going to be some truth in that, but it turns out, but what happened was I wasn't in control of my calendar.
Right.
So I allow people to just book my time all the way.
Right.
And I'll be completely, you can imagine, right? I was completely booked in the day.
Right.
And I'll only clear my emails at the end of the day. And I was late in replying to emails. I was late in making certain decisions. I was not available to certain important things I'll need to be a privy to. So what I really learned from that was I need to be on top of my calendar. Let people know, like, exactly, I need to block out time for myself, what I need to do. And then I can say, okay, I can avail myself at these times. And then we have to work around with that. But I think being on top of a calendar and time management is extremely crucial.
I
would say that would be the number one habit. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. Time, Actually, I, if you don't mind, I have a daily poem about time that I read literally every day. Maybe 2 seconds to pull up. I've got a daily reads that I read at the beginning of my day, but I also, like you, I got to manage my calendar, my day. But I love this poem. It's 20 seconds, 30 seconds long. It goes, time is the inexplicable raw material of everything. With it, all is possible. Without it, nothing. The supply of time is truly a daily miracle, an affair genuinely astonishing when one examines it. You wake up in the morning and lo, your purse is magically filled with 24 hours of the unmanufactured tissue of the universe of your life. It is yours. It is the most precious of possessions. No one can take it from you. It is unstealable, and no one receives either more or less than you receive. In the realm of time, there is no aristocracy of wealth and no aristocracy of intellect. Genius is never rewarded by even an extra hour a day, and there is no punishment. Waste your infinitely precious commodity as much as you will, and the supply will never be withheld from you. Moreover, you cannot draw on the future. It is impossible to get into debt. You can only waste the passing moment. You cannot waste tomorrow. It is kept for you. You cannot waste the next hour. It is kept for you. I've said the affair was a miracle, is it not? You have to live on this 24 hours of daily time. Out of it, you have to spend health, pleasure, money, content, respect, and the evolution of your immortal soul. Its right use, its most effective use, is a matter of the highest urgency and of the most thrilling actuality. All depends on that. Your happiness, the elusive prize that you are all clutching for, my friends, depends on that. If one cannot arrange that an income of 24 hours a day shall exactly cover all proper items of expenditure, one does muddle one's whole life indefinitely. We shall never have any more time. We have, and we have always had, all the time there is. And that's by Arnold Bennett on how to live on 24 hours a day. And I love it. I read, yeah. I it's true. You can make more money. You can improve your health. You can rebuild relationships, but time, it's, yeah, I already said it all.
Yeah. No, it's true. Is that one commodity that you can never get back? Is the one thing that you always have with you, but it's also that one thing that you can never get back. It's the right. most precious commodity you can ever have. 100%. The most precious resource you can ever have. Yeah.
And so talking about time, what do you think is going to happen in the future? If you look forward 5, 10, 15 years, all these, we've had these technological advancements. We've got all this geopolitical stuff happening. There's apparently some unelected people in various positions seemingly trying to push an agenda through the world. What do you think, what are the trends that you're paying attention to? And what do you think the listeners maybe need to keep an eye on over the next 5, 10, 15 years?
Yeah. I mean, you're right. And I think the world is, every time when you read the news, the world is going through some crazy stuff, right? And obviously now we're hearing about the war in Tel Aviv and Hamas and all that. And then you know, last year, it was a war with Russia and Ukraine. So you never know. I think the world is, every time I talk about what's happening in the world, it's always fascinating because you will think that the world is evolving in a better way, but sometimes we also regress and it's very strange. But I think one thing, if you could ask me, that we really pay attention to, and I'm personally paying attention to as well, is the topic of sustainability. Mm. Yeah. And I think that's a very big topic that we have in the Lego group as well. You know, we're obviously producing our Lego bricks with plastic. And you've heard that years ago, we've also began to use sugar cane as a source of material for our bricks. But yes, it is a bit more sustainable source. But at the same time, we're also continuing to have more research in terms of finding more sustainable materials. Sustainability is huge. I think it's something that everyone's paying attention to. Global warming is very real. I think every one of us is living in the world right now. You feel, right, that the weather is very different these days. And I think even the younger generation coming up, I think everyone's paying big attention on the whole topic of sustainability.
Yeah, I agree on a couple of those things. I'm going to push back a little bit on one, but I agree. I think it's irrefutable. Like even 10 years ago, I was on vacation in Thailand and I took a speedboat ride to go to the Similan Islands, which is a group of 7 islands. It's a national park. It took me an hour and a half, 2 hours to get away from civilization to get to this national park. Going there for a couple of days, it was maybe 15 years ago, maybe longer. But this is still long ago. When we get to this destination, this tropical, beautiful tropical island, hours away by speedboat from civilization, just like camping, some huts, whatever you bring there. And I'm there with my girlfriend at the time. We're in paradise. Yeah, no, disconnected from the world. And we go snorkeling. And it's, oh my gosh, so nice. Look, there's Nemo and there's Dory and all the coral. That's so great. And then I found myself in this giant patch of garbage that had just floated there. Like just this massive patch, like in a half hour, it just like almost like a storm blew it in or something, but there's no storm. It just appeared out of nowhere. And I'm like, I can't escape the garbage, the pollution of our species that we're being creating. And so on that side, I agree 1,000%. We have to do better with our waste management. We have to clean up that stuff. Deforestation. I agree with that 100%. But I think there's valid points about the whole climate change in the sense of carbon and global warming, in the sense of when people say it's warming, you always have to ask what year are you starting your measurements from? Because if you change the year you start your measurements from, it changes the whole picture. And if you look at, there's some really good infographics. It's like they've made 36 climate predictions that, you know, and it's out of those 36, it's like 35 of them have not come true. How much of humans are influencing it versus it being a natural process? Because everything a human does creates carbon, from flipping a light switch to taking a poop to, you know, like everything creates carbon. So how much of that is something that we can actually impact? But that said, I think what you said at the beginning, I agree with wholeheartedly, 1,000% sustainability. We need to think like smarter, like our landfills are filling with stuff that isn't going to go anywhere. The oceans are full of plastic. We're just so smart. We need to be living and designing our lives in more intelligently. And to a certain extent, I feel that innovation and necessity will see us through. And what I mean by that is there was never really a political debate about indoor plumbing. There wasn't Noah's like, yes. Toilets are evil. No, leave me my bucket and flies. There was no one that was, wasn't it? Electricity, like indoor lighting. No, yep. I want candles and accidental fires. There wasn't really a big protest about that. And so I feel like
that's true.
We have to be careful of some things. I spoke with the sustainability officer, I forget her job title, but she's like VP of sustainability at, I think it's DPI in Singapore, actually herself. And when we had this conversation, it was even for them, there was the whole like sustainability is real, but they don't like, for example, they don't really buy into ESG because there's been flaws like Philip Morris, a cigarette company, has like an A+ rating. Chevron, one of the oil companies, has an A+ rating, where Tesla's got had before it became publicly identified and updated, they had a C- rating. It's like the electric car company has got a C-, but Chevron, that's had all these massive oil spills, is an A+. But we do need to be better stewards because we're just borrowing this planet from our children.
Absolutely. We need to do better. Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I know I'm on a bit of a soapbox, but I think it's an important point. And you brought it up, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. There's also, we have to balance with all of this. David Deutsch wrote this great book called The Beginning of Infinity. He's the godfather of quantum computing. And in it, he talks about there's like this utopian fantasy of like spaceship Earth. And the idea is that this planet provides everything that we need, and we take care of it and it will take care of us. But the reality is that if you were to look at the band of this planet that we can live on, like just as animals without technology, is very limited. Like I'm from Canada, like the settlers died. Like the settlers came in the spring and wow, it was great. And they had a great summer. And then fall and winter came and killed 90% of them. And so this spaceship Earth thing is not true. And if you look at the evolution of things like the watermelon, like how it's evolved over the years, like we've actually really had to, it's like a blending of what's the yin yang almost of the natural world versus us developing technology and working with it, but even in some ways against it, right? To battle diseases, to battle these things. So it's a weird, I'm going to shut up there because it's supposed to be your interview, not listen to Daryl ramble, but I agree with you. Sustainability is not going anywhere.
Yeah.
These are some of the issues that I think we have to have conversations about. And just, I think the best path is to focus on outcomes more than ideologies. Like it's not, not talking about, I'm this political right versus left with politics. It's, hey, what's the goal? Hey, what's
can
agree on a goal? You know? Yeah. And I think that's a powerful, powerful way. So Jeremy, this has been a great interview. You've given such great answers. I've got a couple pages of notes. Is there anything I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
And when you were asking about that question on trend, I think in my mind has one more thing to add.
Yeah.
So apart from sustainability, I think there's also a trend on diversity and inclusion in the workplace, right? And I think, and I say it because I've seen, also observed where I've come from, where I started my corporate life all the way like over 15, 20 years ago. And I'm seeing right now that there's a huge emphasis on diversity and inclusion. And right. I want to say that it's something that everyone's really sitting up to think about, right? Because there's a quote I remember that society always reinforces the narrative of the majority. Society always reinforces the narrative of the majority. And it's so true, right? Because the society will always be primed to be efficient. And when we're being efficient, it means that it caters to the needs of the majority. But what it also means is we often neglect what's happening to the rest of the people who are considered with a minority or people who are marginalized. And I think this is where the world is sitting up and going, hey, wait a minute, what about people of the LGBTQIA community? What about people with disabilities? What about people who are, what about Black people, right, in the United States? So I think there's a lot of discussions around it, and I can see that it's being impacted in the workplace. It's impacting the products, for example, that we come up with in the Lego group, in our toy, in our playing experiences. And I think people are really going to sit up and start listening and start thinking like, hey, wait a minute, how do we design the world better?
Yeah.
How do we design the world to be a more inclusive place for all of us who lives in it? And how can I be more compassionate as a person to think that, hey, wait a minute, there's somebody else in society that's a bit different from me. And how is this person's experience, living experience in society different? And how can I make it better? And I think if we all can do it together as a society, we're all going to build a much better society and a much better workplace for everybody. And I think that's going to be really important. Yeah.
Yeah. I think what you're speaking to, it's almost this timeless debate. I got to bring up the yin yang, but it seems to be that, like, as a species, we lurch like a drunken stupor, like marching forward between equality and freedom. And that's almost the, if you were to strip away the crony capitalism, and if you were to strip away a lot of the Marxist ideologies, it really boils down to equality versus freedom. Because in a free society, not all are equal, but in an equal society, not all are free. And there's a caveat, because you need both. Because when you have pure freedom, which is it's the ideal, so to speak, in the sense it should be a meritocracy. So what that means is that if I'm looking for toys for my kid, how many people are shopping for kids for children's toys today, right now? It's unknown and unknowable. You might be able to find indicators, but ultimately it's unknown and unknowable. But, and it changes every minute, every hour of every day, but excellence is recognized by everybody. So you want to be the most excellent, because then you become the default choice, and that sees you through thick or thin, so to speak. But if you're not free to innovate and do your thing, if you're forced to be equal, then there's not that. But the problem is that without, not everybody gets the same level playing field to start from.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's this like awkward thing. Like, how do we lift people up without losing a meritocracy at the same time? How do we make sure everybody has the access to training and tools and the ability to get experience, and the systemic racism and prejudices are lost? So what we can have, it's almost, you talked about big data. Data is only as valuable data. Like you said, if you're not working from a full data set, you're going to have biased decision-making, and it might be a fatal flaw.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree with you on that.
And I totally agree with what you said. And so we always have this saying that equity isn't equal to equality. So it's not everybody the same, but then again, because we all start on different playing fields, we all have different starting points in life. How then do we then support one another to do our very best wherever we are in terms of our starting point? And I think that's a real question.
I agree wholeheartedly. And I hope that as we're moving away from a unipolar world right now, as a closing thought, where it was a rules-based world order with rules imposed by the Western elites, and we're really clearly moving towards a multipolar world, that we can hopefully find a way to agree on outcomes and work together. Like in Canada, there was just a massive rally. It was like the Million March for Kids or something like that. And there were Christians and Muslims standing side by side, kind of like doing their thing. And they were able to come together because the focus was on how do we provide the best environment for our children type thing. Mm-hmm. And that was, and again, I think it really means instead of being, and I hate this, like left versus right, or even like hetero versus whatever. I really think that's not the way that gets into tribal type thinking. It should just be about outcome based. What are we trying to accomplish? Let's begin with the end in mind, and let's all work on that together. Because I know as a business owner, especially when it comes to a sales team, to bring it around to sales, I don't care if you're showing up and you're purple. You know what I mean? I don't care if you're purple. I don't care if you like eating crickets in your room at night. I don't care if you have a balloon fetish. As long as you come in as a sales team and we do great, and we take care of the customers and we're helping all the people that we can help, then cool. I learned something new today. I don't have to travel anymore. I'm having a cultural experience at work. Yeah. So I agree with that wholeheartedly. Jeremy, great. Was there anything else you wanted to add or mention or?
No, but I just want to say that it's been such a great experience just talking with you here. And yeah, really happy that you invited me. I'm super, super happy to have had this experience.
Yeah, Jeremy, appreciate you too. And if people want to reach out, if people want to learn more, where do they get in touch?
You can definitely find me on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
go look him up on LinkedIn. It's Jeremy Lee, Jeremylee. But it's got the right guy if he's based out of Singapore and he was working for the Lego Group. So Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us. It has been an honor and a pleasure. And I really appreciate your time here, knowing you have so much on your plate.
Likewise. Thank you so much, Daryl. Thank you.